Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's two kinds of people that don't doubt, right? You don't doubt if you don't think deeply about things, and you don't doubt if you ain't never been through nothing, right?
Yeah.
People think that their lack of doubt is the presence of faith, but at the end of the day, I think their lack of doubt is just the presence of privilege. Like, they just haven't gone through anything.
When it seems like you have all the right
questions. When it seems you have all the right questions, never enough answers. Your faith is small enough to fit in the cracks of your palms.
Consider the birds that eat from my hand and do not fall from the sky without my consent. So how much more will I love the ones that I died for? Before you doubt me, doubt your doubts.
It's easier said than done. Easier said than done. Imagine that the future is much like an actual land, a new place that is waiting to be discovered. It used to be that explorers of the past would hop on a boat or a horse and carriage and find a new land. To be an explorer was to find new places. But as our century continues on into the horizon of knowledge, the unknown becoming smaller and bigger at the same time, the explorers of our time are not those on a boat voyage or a journey on horse and carriage into the dusty west. This new frontier is not geographical. It's digital, informational, philosophical, political, sexual. Scientists of all different disciplines have sent their very own explorers into the future to scout out this new territory. And regularly, they return home to the present to report their sightings, what they found about the future. And we, the natives of time present, curious of the hope of tomorrow's land, eagerly asked them, "What did you find? Is it better than where we are now? When will we have flying cars? What will the sexual ethics be like? Is LeBron James still the greatest player of all time? When do we cure cancer and AIDS? Do we become immortal?" And with every ship from the future that docks at our ports, the prophets of science come to tell us of all the great things they discovered, how it is better than we ever imagined. And people like myself, people who carry around with them the God of their ancestors, we ask, in your new world, is there a place for me and my people, my faith, my God? This strange new continent of ideas is vast and open. Yet it's still narrow, still limited. It's raw and uncultivated, but it measured, restricted. In this new world, There seems to be only an obscure island off the coast left for the religious. We are told the future only has enough room for a few of us, and they'll only tolerate the tolerant. We're constantly given the impression that religion is superstition of ancient days. Whatever explanations of life the saints once offered to humanity are now outdated. Our Bibles might as well be on floppy disks. Yahweh is obsolete technology. And so, because of sermons preached at these ports, believers like me doubt. We doubt our usefulness for the future. We doubt we will be allowed into the new horizon with all our religious baggage. And ironically, the God of Revelation is not allowed to travel to the last days. His faithful must stay here, quarantined to the present. What's going on, family? My name is Joseph Solomon. I'm a singer, songwriter, poet, spoken word artist, YouTuber, lifelong student, ever doubtful Christian, frequent flyer. Welcome to the first flight of the Flights and Feelings Podcast, Season 1, where we thoughtfully and vulnerably travel through faith, relationships, sexuality, science, health, and culture via storytelling, poetry, and conversation. So even though this podcast has flights in the title, you should know that this is technically not a travel show. However, in each episode, I will share travel stories or just stories in general, and I'll also give travel tips. And the travel tips are not always crazy extraordinary. They're just little things I've learned along the way to make my adventures more convenient, affordable, and enjoyable. So today's flight tip is commit to an airline. Yes, commit to an airline. And this is actually a good time to be talking about this because most airlines operate on a calendar year from January to December for their elite statuses. And it starts over every January. So the best time to choose an airline is typically in the beginning of the year. If you're going to be somewhat of a frequent flyer this year, you should strongly consider finding an airline to commit to. So many people just buy whatever's cheapest, which is cool. If you're flying only once or twice a year and price is your highest priority in what you choose, that's fine. But if you're going to be flying several times a year, we're talking 20 plus one-way flights in a year or 10 round trips in a year, you should strongly consider putting a ring on an airline because the dollars you spend can add to your status, and that status can come with amazing travel perks like free check bags, priority boarding, free first class upgrades, all that good stuff. I get it all the time. So if you see me there, don't think I'm stunting. I got it for free. I ain't paying for it. So which airline should you get booed up with? Well, that depends on things like how frequent you fly, which airlines have a hub near you, and what you're hoping to get from said airline. I'd also say if you're already booked an overseas flight for this year, that might be the airline you want to consider sticking with because that overseas flight is a lot of miles and probably a lot of dollars. And you want to take advantage of that big purchase. So that might be your first lead. People who fly semi-frequently swear by Spirit or Southwest. I'm not going to even discuss Spirit because it's not of the Spirit. It's just don't fly Spirit. But Southwest is cool for most people and probably because it's tailored for the infrequent and semi-frequent flyers, which is pretty much like 85% of people who fly. And this is because their perks are mostly offered up front. Everyone gets 2 free check bags. Everyone gets no cancellation fees ever. But even if you fly like 50 times this year, the perks don't go too far beyond the person who flew 5 times that year. No first class to be upgraded to, no extra bags to check in for free. You just get to board into open seating earlier than most people. And even that's not promised if you show up late. I show up late all the time. But Delta, who I fly with, and other airlines like American and United, don't offer a lot of perks up front, but they offer much more the more you fly. They want you to commit. So yeah, Southwest has 2 free bags, but I fly enough with Delta that I get 3 70-pound bags. Southwest only does 50. I do 70-pound bags for free. And first-class upgrades, free comfort seating, early boarding, sky lounge entry, and blah, 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 all that good stuff. So you got to see Southwest like this. Southwest is like the guy or the girl that you're interested in who is pretty much going to offer everything they're going to offer you in the first 3 weeks of knowing them. And hey, if you just here for a good time, not a long time, then getting all the perks up front might be your game. They gave you everything they can offer in the first month, but hey, you only plan to be here for 3 months, so it works. But if you're here for a good time and a long time, then you want someone who's going to have more to offer as time goes on. The more commitment you give, the more benefits you receive. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Delta. Long story short, get you a Delta. Not like a Delta Sigma Theta, although that could be, but just metaphorically speaking. Ladies and gentlemen, that is today's flight tip. Today, we're going to talk about doubt and future-proof faith. I'm somewhat of a techie. I'm a technology fanatic, and I'm always interested in what's the newest development in something, especially if it's something I plan on buying, like an iPhone or headphones, car, cameras, computers, whatever. And the biggest concern when buying new technology is, how future-proof is this device? If I get it now, will something 5 times better come out tomorrow? So a lot of us are very doubtful before making a purchase, or even very doubtful after we've made the purchase, that buyer's remorse. You see someone else with a better version and now you're mad because that 14-day return policy just went out the window yesterday. And I think we may feel the same way about faith sometimes, or at least I do. Are my beliefs future-proof? I gave my life to Jesus. I told all my friends about it, broke up with my girlfriend. She gone. She a sinner. And all I do now is post scriptures on Facebook. But then I started hearing about some new stuff, some new developments, some new releases. And now I have doubt. Will my belief system still be true and relevant 10 years from now or 20 years from now? Or even tomorrow? But this is not going to be an apologetics episode where we deal with arguments or proofs for and against Christianity. That stuff can be helpful. It's been helpful to me in the past, but sometimes it's been a bit distracting. It's caused more doubt and more questions. It can be a rabbit hole depending on which turn you take. So this is not going to be specifically addressing why or why not someone should believe the Bible or something like that. This episode is really getting to the feeling and the experience of doubt, something I've experienced often, but I've also experienced a lot of faith and belief often as well. So today I'm bringing on a co-host with me, local pastor in Atlanta, a public speaker, husband, father, PhD student, and just a good friend of mine to sort of balance this thing out. His name is John Amuchekwa. Y'all can follow him on Instagram at John_O, JAWN_O. And the conversation that we had was enlightening to me. It was somewhat therapeutic, and hopefully it's helpful to you as you listen as well.
Yeah, like, so, you know, there's like certain like words that people want to place as like a vice or a virtue, right? Like, man, as you talk about emotions, you get folks that run around and say, man, I never get angry. And yeah, yo, I don't get sad. And it's like, man, anger isn't a bad thing, right? It's not this vice.
it's a vehicle that leads you towards, no, this is what I love, and what I love is being attacked. So it's a very, like, good thing. And doubt's the same way. So for somebody to say, man, I don't doubt, my faith is strong. You know, there's two kinds of people that don't doubt, right? They're, like, you don't doubt if you don't think deeply about things, and you don't doubt if you ain't never been through nothing, right?
Yeah.
That there's something about, like, tragedy. There's something about, like, just the disconnect that comes when it's like, man, I hear about God's goodness while I'm burying my 32-year-old brother and his wife and three kids, or they're crying. Like, and it's like, wait a minute, all the stuff that I thought that I knew about God, like, I doubt because I've been through things. And sometimes, like, people think that their lack of doubt is the presence of, like, faith. But at the end of the day, I think their lack of doubt is just the presence of privilege. Like, they just haven't gone through anything. They hear about God's goodness, and they see God's goodness, and their faith hasn't really been tested, man. And I just think, yeah, we just have to start with doubt is not this bad thing. It's not this bad word. It's a human thing. It's part of life. Yeah.
So I think one of the biggest things that has sort of steered my doubt in some way or motivated my doubt is that same, I've just realized that I feel that same sense, the way I feel with technology, as if Jesus is some kind of technology or whatever. But I see it as a technology that I want to make sure I'm always up to date, that I'm always up to speed with whatever's new. And not even necessarily new, just still capable.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm cool with, there's things like camera lenses that were made in the 90s, and there hasn't been much updating to them. They're just like,
right. They're
just great lenses.
Yeah.
And you can upgrade your camera all you want, but that lens is going to hold its value. And it's just, so there are things that you can get that are not necessarily new, but they're always relevant.
Right.
And so that's kind of been the concern for me, is like, I want to get the best lens possible.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To attach myself to, and then it'll carry me over into whatever future. But the fear has kind of been for me sometimes as I read through, because again, I'm super into, like, just reading about biotech and human genome editing and artificial intelligence and all that stuff, self-driving cars. And I'm always into that kind of thing. Like, what's going to be on the new horizon for us? And then in that, every time you hear people talk about any of these things, whether it's said explicitly or implicitly, God is not allowed, specifically the Jesus God.
Yeah.
That God in particular,
right?
He's not allowed. We'll allow spirituality.
Yeah.
We'll allow, mindfulness, and stuff, meditation and all this. This sort of spiritual awareness per se, but to have Jesus in there, we're just not with it.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
So ironically, that's a great question. Ironically, that has been an apologetic for my own heart, because it doesn't fit in the overall narrative of what post-modernity is, which is everything's allowed as long as you don't hurt anybody. And so there's one part of it, Christians who, we can talk about buzzword topics like gay marriage and abortion and stuff like that, and that'll sort of put you on one side or the other in whether or not you're allowed to be a Christian in this space.
Yeah.
But even if you fall in, a quote unquote liberal space politically, there's still, at some point, they'll let you in for a while, but at some point there's going to be this another sort of barrier that's coming up that basically says, okay, yeah, we're tolerable of you, and we appreciate you supporting us this way politically. We appreciate you supporting us this way socially. But that whole, there's one way to God, this physical man that died and he rose and he was God in the flesh. That stuff was mythical, and we're going to have to leave it behind at some point. And I've always found that very odd, the sort of culture that we live in now. We're always looking to attack whoever is in the privileged position.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Which is good sometimes. The privileged need to be challenged.
Absolutely.
Like sometimes I feel it. But it's almost like this one size fits all type thing. Mm-hmm. And so Christianity falls in that, is that
right.
We in a lot of ways have been the privileged faith. You know, you got privileged race, you got privileged genders, you got whatever, but then you got privileged socioeconomic status, then you have privileged faith, and that has to be subjected to the Marxist sort of critique as well. And that, so like the bourgeoisie is the Christian, is the Christian who has had so many privileges in this, particularly in America and other places.
Yeah, you know, to that point as well, I think, man, one thing that Christianity does is it's like there are other faiths, you know, a religiosity and a spirituality. I don't think people mind those things as much because you get a lot more autonomy in how you want to live your life, and spirituality becomes this addendum or add-on, like, let me come alongside and make things better. And they will agree with the generic, like, yeah, do what you want to do just so long as you don't hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. Christianity is a little more authoritative, where it's like Jesus steps in and says, yeah, do what you want to do so long as you don't hurt anybody. But let me be the one to define what's harmful. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, so folks will say things like, porn, porn's cool because it doesn't hurt anybody. And Christ says, well, let me define harm here. Mm-hmm. Harm is you are denigrating the dignity of people being created in God's image by the way that you look at them. And I'm going to say that that's harm. I'm going to say that that's out of bounds. And now what you have is like, Christianity is going to challenge everything and everybody at every step of the way. Yeah. And I think that's why it's excluded sometimes, because it's like, not like we don't agree with the definitions that you set. We want to be free to set our own and to move how. Yeah.
And that's interesting, though, especially when we talk about, and that's, again, another thing for me when I've been dealing with doubt and wrestling, whether or not, like, is Christianity future proof for me?
Yeah.
Is this idea of morality, and it's interesting that so many people these days want to consider Christianity a myth, but we all have to believe in a quote-unquote myth to make this thing called human dignity work.
Yeah.
And so when you start talking about, like, you know, well, the Christian God wants to tell you what's wrong and what's harmful or whatever, you're like, well, no, I don't want any other God to tell me what's harmful. I don't want anybody to tell me what's harmful or wrong or right or whatever. I can decide it for myself. I'm a modern thinking human.
Right.
I can do that for myself. Okay, great. So who's going to decide that as a community of people, whether locally or nationally or globally, who decides what that looks like? And I know there's a lot of disagreement even within Christianity of what that looks like, but just in general, who decides what that looks like? And if there's particularly no God at all, then we have to hold some myth. If there's no God, we have to hold on to this myth that humans, outside of every other evolved organism, is somehow special.
Right.
Somehow, whatever the word dignity means in that context, dignified, they have value.
Yeah.
And then that has to be the launching pad for us to decide things on, like, you know, what is racial injustice?
Right.
What is gender equality?
Right.
If there is no such thing as human sacredness.
Right.
There's no such thing as human sacredness. Like, if there's nothing special about a human other than the fact that we just went down another part of the evolution tree.
Right.
We went a little further. Our brains got bigger.
Yeah.
And that's our only defining feature.
Yeah.
Then the reality is we're not special. We're not sacred.
Right.
We're we're not all that amazing. We actually do a lot of things bad. And there's a lot of animals out there that do things a little better than us.
Right, if
we're honest, a little more decent right. to each other than we are. Yeah. And so if that's the case, we have to hold to a myth, some myth. We have to make up a myth. And if you believe Christianity is a myth, it's just not your myth of choice.
Yeah.
You still have to have, you have to choose a myth in order for you to make sense of your life.
Yeah, I think we spend so much time and argue about, you know, right or wrong, this way or that way, and we don't spend enough time saying, all right, no. What's the narrative that goes on in the background? Like, how do you determine your purpose? What is the narrative that explains how it is that you view the world? And I think just to that point, like, that's the thing that makes Christianity or that's the thing that makes our faith future proof, right? Is that throughout every age, Christianity, it's not just ideals. It is this like narrative that's this timeless story. Mm. So I think we can tend to think of Christianity like, you know, like an iPhone that's gonna, I want to make sure that what I believe in isn't obsolete. But I think it's more helpful to think of it like a, you know, a novel and a story.
Yes.
That it's like a, you know, Cinderella, like, they're gonna remake that story until the cows come home.
Yes.
Every era of time has their royalty that is lost, that is fallen, that spends their time at the bottom of the barrel, and there's something inside of them that speaks to the fact that, like, there's something more, or they were made for more. And as time goes on, this person that was thought of as lowly, like, rises to this position of power, but they don't enforce justice on the people that oppress them. Instead, they give them this kindness. And it's really, you know, the storyline of what God has done in Christ that is the thing that's constant through the ages. So, I think it's like a good narrative, a good story is never obsolete. And we have to find, like, how God's story in Christ, like, intersects with the story or the narratives of the world we live in. Yeah.
I think what has helped me move through doubt in a way that's, I don't want to say comfortable, but it's been much more bearable. Like, when I remember the first time I started doubting, I had a lot of doubts in college about whether or not, really was focused more so like whether or not the Bible was really real, did Jesus even actually exist, those kind of things. And when I first started having those questions, I just freaked out.
Yeah.
I was just and then just like freaking out. And every time it came back for a while, it was a panic. It was always
What did you do with it? Like,
well, it was just like, well, that's the end of it. Like, it was like, if you doubt any one little thing, like, all right, if I'm doubting, man, I'm reading through Matthew or whatever, and I'm like, that doesn't sound believable. Yeah. It's like, oh, that means
it's the Jenga piece.
Thing away. Throw it all away. You know what I'm saying? Just throw the whole thing away.
Yeah.
And I think that the first few years that it was happening, I would just panic. And then eventually, as I started to see it be just kind of part of the natural ebb and flow of faith, of growing, and I started seeing more examples in the scriptures of other believers who I thought were pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Doubt.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus talks about John the Baptist
right.
and how he's you know, greatest man to ever live, and you hear so much about him. He's coming in the wood. He's eating locusts for Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Like, this man is a G for Jesus, dog. Yeah. You want to aspire to be like Jesus, but if you miss Jesus, just try to be like John. Like that's, if you can just get like John, I think you're all right. And then, you know, he gets put in jail.
Yeah.
And then he's like, so Jesus, was it you? Because I thought it was you.
I heard some of our captives being set free. I'm feeling real very captive-y. I'm feeling very captive-y.
It's a very captive feeling.
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I was just like, oh, John the Baptist doubted whether or not Jesus was the Messiah?
Yeah, yeah.
And so the more and more I doubted, the more and more I ran to the Bible to try to, you know, figure things out in my panic.
Yeah.
And then I saw other people panicking. And by seeing other people panic who I thought were way better than me made me feel like, oh, I ain't never been to jail for Jesus. So, you know, I guess I don't have to panic too much.
Yeah.
And it just became more normalized for me.
It's the start of the year. So, you know, I'm reading through the Bible again, and I'm still at the part where it's like I haven't lost steam yet, right? Yeah, I will around March when we get into Leviticus and all that. But yeah, I'm in Genesis, and it's crazy seeing somebody like Abraham and, you know, the faith that he has in God. And it, like, God looks at him, and it's like Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as, like, and he was counted as righteous. So here you have a man perfectly righteous in Genesis 15. And then in chapter 16, he's like, God, I don't know if you're going to come through on your word, so I'm going to have a kid with somebody else.
whoa, Abraham.
So it's like crazy just to be reminded of the fact, like, man, yeah, this is the ebb and flow of us. Like, we are this mixture of folks that, you know, have faith in God. We soar one day and we sink the next. And I think, man, one thing that you said that I don't want to just move past was you were like, yeah, man, when I started to like get doubt in the first few years, right? I think sometimes what folks can do is they can say, all right, man, I'm doubting. This is great. Joe's got a podcast on doubt. I'm just going to listen and I'm going to be made whole. And it was, what was that like to like for, you said 4 years?
Yeah. Well, I always thought that there was a magic bullet that was going to come. Yeah. Just sort of like you said, like maybe this podcast. Like, oh yeah, man, yes, Joe Solomon did a thing on doubting. And I always thought there was going to be, man, maybe I just didn't read the right apologetic book. I didn't hear the right sermon.
Yeah.
That would somehow literally make me believe. Like, I would finally be like, oh, okay, Christianity is absolutely 100%, 1,000% true, and I'll never have to doubt again.
Right.
It may take a year or two, but once I figure that thing out, like, I'll be soaring after that.
Yeah.
And that time never came. Like, I kept waiting for those, and I thought it was. I was like, maybe if I find the right person to talk to me in the way that I need to be talked to, like, that person is going to be the one to really help me. I just kept putting hope in a lot of, I don't sound too preachy, but earthly things, you know, just hoping that one thing would come, and it never came, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
No, nothing ever came. And I think that sounds a little discouraging, but it was actually really encouraging.
Right.
Because then I stopped waiting around for, my approach is now to scripture and apologetics and just conversation about life in general has been much more patient and at ease. And it's not this like, this overwhelming hope.
Right.
That I've been putting in some resource.
Right.
You know, that's not God. when I finally got comfortable in my doubt, and I, again, that's why I have a pastor here, so I can talk candidly, and then like he can sort of tell me whether or not, like, I don't want people thinking like, man, Joe over here telling everybody, man, just get comfortable with it, man. Don't do nothing with
just
it.
Just kick your feet up.
Hey, man. Listen, Jesus is God, maybe not. I don't know, but you know, get comfortable with it. Like, I don't want people to hear that.
Yeah.
But what I do want to say is that I got comfortable in it in the sense that when things came, when those thoughts came, it was as if one of my pastors, I hear his voice saying it. And I grew up with the pastor I grew up, he would say, man, take no thought. Bob says, take no thought. And so he's like, man, thoughts are always going to come.
Right.
You can have 1,000 packages delivered to you, but you ain't got a sign for them.
No,
and so that really helped me to understand that when those thoughts came, it really took a lot of maturity to see them in my brain, in my mind, and then not own them or let them own me.
Right.
Like, didn't just come in and just start wreaking havoc. It's like, man, but what about this scripture here? What about this text? Like, this atheist said this, or this Muslim said that, or whatever it may be, or this person said this about whatever scripture. And I could just go, yeah, it's actually a good question. I'll check it out.
That's a good point. Yep.
I'm not, I just don't panic anymore,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, when we brought our daughter home, And I'll never forget, like, the first time that we started to, you know, give her baths, and we had to help her, like, wash her face, or her face. And so it's like the first time you, like, splash water into a baby's face.
Which I would love to see.
It's priceless. I love my daughter. But their arms, like, flail, and you can just tell, like, the look on their face is one of utter terror. Like, they think that they're drowning. And it's like, yo, you're not drowning.
It's cool.
Yeah. Water has to hit your face. I know it's going to feel like this, but you're not drowning. And what you find out, I mean, is it's like, no, it takes a lot of time. Like, the next time you give them a bath and they're still in your arms, the water is really, really low. Splash water. You're not drowning, and it's just this constant, like, no, I know it's a shock, but trust me, you're not drowning. Like, I've got you in my arms. I love you. I care for you. I'm your father. I'm not gonna let you drown. And I think, man, that's what helps us turn the corner, I think, and what gives us permission to, like, feel this way, just to say, oh no, yeah, I absolutely know what it. I know what it is to feel like you're drowning, and that's a common thing that we all feel. But one of the things we have to remember, or with faith, is like, but I'm in my Father's arms, so it feels like I'm drowning.
I will say, man, when you say that, bro, like, I've told people, no matter how many doubts I have about the Christian faith, it has been, as restrictive as some people may feel like it is, the most, you know, authoritative or dogmatic, or whatever, however you want to take it, the essence of the gospel message has been one of the most restful spaces for me to be in, because it does allow for doubt. And you have to think of it this way. This God, who is all-knowing, all-powerful, all-sure of himself in a way that is beyond us, has chosen to come and love a people that he didn't have to love. And then he decided to color them with his righteousness.
Yeah.
And he says, just come to me. He doesn't say, get yourself together, figure things out, right, figure how this works out, and then you can be in my presence.
Yeah.
He says, well, I'm just going to come into your presence.
Right.
I'm going to make you worthy enough to be in my presence. Mm. And so all of the responsibility of having everything figured out before you can stay here, before you're allowed to be in this space, has already been covered.
Yeah.
And so that's another reason why I grew, I can say, comfortable in my doubt.
Yeah.
And again, I don't have to keep adding preface to that or whatever, but like I became comfortable because it was like, if this is true, if what y'all say is true about Jesus, that it really is that you're saved by grace only, that he decided to come on his own volition to love you in whatever state you're in.
Yeah.
And then he now declares whatever position you're in to be eternal. Like this is the declaration.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that I can do to wiggle out of that. Yeah. He's got me. Then it's like, oh yeah. Like, it's like your daughter. Like, yeah, she may like freak out. You tell her like, calm down, whatever it may be. Like, no matter what she does, that doesn't change your disposition.
Right.
It doesn't make you now freak out and confused and like, oh my gosh. Like,
I'm calm.
Yeah, you're calm. And she doesn't somehow wiggle herself out or whatever it may be. Whatever she's feeling, it doesn't transfer to the one that's holding her. And that's so if that's the case, then it's like, okay. Yeah, I'd like to be Ava who's not like freaking out. But if I am, I could be that for a while.
Right.
And that's not gonna not gonna change your disposition.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, yeah. That's so good, yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for the first episode of season one of the Flights and Feelings podcast. Thank y'all so much for tuning in. I know many people have been excited, anxious, and just asking a lot of questions about when the podcast is going to come. It's finally here. I wanted to take my time, do it right. Wanted it to feel authentic and real and thought through. So I hope that you stick with me on this journey. I'm looking forward to growing through the conversations and through the writing for this. And I hope that you are too. So again, thank you. You could be going anywhere in the world with anybody else, but you're right here. So thank you for choosing the Flights and Feelings podcast. Remember to always fly home.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.